It's Old Dutch Foods Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba, and for all those joining us online, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 6 hours from now, puck drop between the Winnipeg Jets and the Tampa Bay Lightning. This is the start of Old Dutch Foods Game Day here on TSN 1290. I'm your host of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my good friend, Richard Pollock. Richard, good afternoon.
Hello, Drew.
Before we get any further into the show...
What am I, a mirage?
Before we get any further into the show, I think we need to discuss the fact that Ezra has showed up to the studio here with his own entourage. You know, the guy gets mentioned in one of the Winnipeg papers once, and all of a sudden he shows up with his own entourage. Richard, what are your thoughts about Ezra's entourage?
Ezra who?
Well, you know,
hang on. Are we allowed to talk to you? Are we allowed to make eye contact with you?
Yeah. Well, no, Drew, you're my director of corporate communications. This is the thing. People don't know this. Illegal Curve has become such a big media empire that we've designated Drew as our director of corporate communications. But in all seriousness,
that wasn't serious.
The GST. Well, it is kind of true. But you know, we're talking
which
about
part?
The GST.
The corporate communications or the empire.
Everyone knows we have an empire. It's
built on a house of cards, but it's an empire.
It's a multinational conglomerate.
It's built on
at this point.
A giant apple pancake, but...
The GSD line got some good credit in the newspaper, but I want to go on the record, and this is the thing, because there was a mention in The Sun, and there was a mention in the Free Press, but the line was created by myself and Jay Richardson, who hosts The Big Show with Troy Westwood and Maddie Leibel weekdays in the mornings, but without Dave Minuk and Michael Remus... of IllegalCurve.com, nobody would have found out about the line because...
Hang on.
I want to give them credit, too.
The only people you're not giving credit to are Richard and I.
Yeah, you guys did nothing.
So you're giving no credit to Richard. It's going to be a long show, I'll tell you what.
Well, no,
for the next 3 hours, if you're not giving us any credit whatsoever, it's going to be
it's
a long
funny,
show.
You actually stole that from Drew in the preseason when Pessinen was playing left wing on that line. Not that he played on that line.
Oh,
he had the PST line.
That's good.
And then you just stole it, and then you act as if it was your own.
That's not true. That's completely false. But I give you guys credit for being... on my radio show, which is the best hockey show in the city.
Radio show.
But I love you guys. But no, you got to give credit. You know, David Remus went down to the arena and told them about the line. But in all seriousness, the win on Thursday night was awesome. And the GST line, I love those guys. That's my favorite line. It's not just because, you know, the name caught on. Those guys are getting the job done. Those guys are grinding type of forwards, but they're putting up points. Tanner Glass had 3 points. And it's great. It's been a lot of fun, and it's great to see that, you know, people like the name and the players themselves like the name. So
the irony, of course, being that you've yet to pay taxes in your 29 years of life in Winnipeg.
No, I think I've been paying taxes since what, 2000? Since you turn 18, you pay taxes, right?
I'm really not 100%.
And yeah, I'm in the tens of thousands of dollars. So my car is probably being repossessed outside of the Trump Studios right now.
You're one of the 1% that the people in the Occupy movement are protesting against.
I was going to say, as he was actually occupying Wall Street in Winnipeg.
Interesting. The one that, you know, near Sargent
Portage,
and Aaron.
Yeah.
Nobody was there.
Yeah,
nobody was there.
It was like an industrial area. I was expecting more people, but there was just a couple of people walking their dog. It wasn't very successful.
And then you occupied a giant apple pancake this morning.
Anyways, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. We have a jam-packed show for you this morning, coming up in about 10 minutes' time. He's the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's Rick Peckham. He's going to join us, talk about the Lightning a little bit ahead of tonight's Jets-Lightning game that gets underway in about 6 hours. Of course, pregame starts, I guess, with us now, and then, of course, Hustler and Lawless after us, and Rick Ralph at 5 o'clock, puck drop at 6 with... Dennis Bayak and Brian Munns and Shane Knighty, of course.
Right.
This, you know, 7-game road trip the Jets are on, so it's we have a lot to talk about, especially after Thursday night's game in Philadelphia. Coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon, looking a little bit ahead to next to Monday's game against the Florida Panthers. George Richards of the Miami Herald is going to join us.
The G-man,
exactly. That's his email address. The G-man.
I want to ask Drew. I know we have one more guest to announce, but I want to ask George Richards about his Expos Twitter pick. He's changed his Twitter pick to the Expo symbol, so I'm hoping to you're looking at me. I guess we're not going to ask him.
Yeah, we're definitely not asking that. You can.
We might ask you to leave the show before you.
Yeah, that, like that. In fact, at 2 o'clock, you're going to have. We're going to ban you from.
My entourage featuring Sabrina Carnevale and others.
And others. There you go. And our final guest coming up at 12:45, Gabe Desjardins. You hear him all the time on this program. He's from BehindTheNetHockey.com. He's going to join us. Before we look forward to tonight's Jets-Lightning game, let's look back last night in the NHL. Let's start in Carolina, where the Carolina Hurricanes really took care of business on home ice, beating a good Chicago Blackhawks team, 3-0 Carolina over the Blackhawks.
One of the biggest differences you notice between Carolina watching them in Winnipeg and watching them on the highlights is Cam Ward.
Yeah, sure.
And he was great last night. I think he stopped 31 shots on net. Some good quality chances there. Cam Ward is very, very in control. He is a significant factor behind everything that they do. And we didn't see him here, and I think Boucher allowed 5 goals. But that's another thing, Drew. We're running into a lot of backup goalies, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
Cam Ward, huge factor there. 3-0. Brandon Sutter had a huge goal in the, off a breakaway coming out of the box and make it 2-0, kind of cement that one.
Would you expect Cam Ward to be one of the Team Canada goaltenders in Sochi, Russia, assuming the NHL goes?
He's so reliable.
Wouldn't surprise me if he's the starting goaltender.
He might be. You're absolutely right.
It's funny because in 2010, it was pretty much Marty Brodeur or Roberto Luongo.
Who was the third?
Fleury. And I'm not going to get into this because people right now are very critical of Roberto Luongo. I wouldn't be surprised to see Brodeur won't be there, obviously.
Luongo won't be the starter either.
Luongo might not even make the team, but I think he will.
I would expect it would be Ward.
We're not breaking down the 2014 Canadian goaltenders.
Price is also in that discussion.
That's right. Price, Ward, and Fleury would not surprise me as those three.
Luongo won. This is the thing. I actually am a big Luongo supporter and fan. He's had a bad start, and he had a bad Game 7. We're not going to get into this right now.
I hear the Vancouver province is advocating trading him actually to the Worcester Ice Dogs of the AHL.
That discussion is actually going to heat up. The more the season goes along, the Schneider-Luongo discussion is going to heat up. And once again, let's not get into that right now, but it's possible that Canada has a lot of good goalies right now. It's possible he won't be one of the three.
Richard's shaking his head wondering why we're talking about
this. Next game, let's talk about the Oilers.
Okay, let's talk about the Oilers. They went into Colorado. Yeah. Colorado's been playing very well to start the season. They went into Colorado and beat them 3-1 last night.
Sure did.
What would you like to talk about?
There's a number of things to talk about. Obviously, they've been getting great goaltending.
And Devan Dubnyk.
The youngsters are playing really well. Habib Bulin's played extremely well as well, Drew.
Yeah.
He's leading the league in wins right now.
No, I don't think you can underestimate the impact that Ryan Smith had both in the locker room and on the ice. I think he had 3 points last night. He adds a veteran presence on a team that didn't have one last year, guys. Remember, they won last night, didn't have Ryan Whitney. Their defense is still terrible. Tom Rennie's got them buying in. Now they're going to... The percentages are going to catch after them, so to speak. But, hey, you get your wins, you log the points. Up front, they're dangerous. They have their kid line there with Nugent Hopkins and Hall. You can throw Smith and Horkoff out against tougher lines. Horkoff's very good defensively. Belanger certainly helps them in the circle and a guy who can play kind of every role. I picked them in the division this year, guys. Remember, to finish third out of the fifth, ahead of Minnesota and Colorado. And remember, you asked surprise teams twice. I said Carolina, and then I said Edmonton. There's a lot of potential here. Now, they're going to come back to the pack. They're not going to keep this pace as...
6-2-2 through the first 10 games.
And they're not going to keep that pace. But at the same time, they have demonstrated that, A, their youngsters are going to be developing, it seems like, at a very smooth pace. And also the fact that they've also demonstrated the importance of having veterans with young players, especially veterans with quality skills like Ryan Smith.
Richie, what about Corey Don't Call Me Harry Potter? Where did this guy come from? I mean,
that's the worst nickname I've ever heard for somebody.
That's a bad nickname.
That's awful. We might throw you out of the show a little bit earlier than even 2 o'clock.
I've still got my entourage. I'm good.
That's just Don't call me Harry Potter?
It was bad.
That's awful. Yeah.
Cut my mic, Tim.
The Oilers are 5-1-1 at home. They played 7 of their first 10 games at home. And they've taken care of business on home ice, 5-1-1. You can't criticize them for that. They had a good opportunity to get off to a good start, and they've taken advantage of it.
That's right.
Let's move on from that game, because we're certainly not talking about Corey Potter. San Jose went into Detroit. They established themselves probably as really going to be one of the teams to beat in the Western Conference.
As always.
Yeah, as always. 4-2 San Jose in Detroit. Anytime you can go into Detroit and, and pull off a win, you're doing something. You're doing something well.
And Richie, doesn't it seem like now that they've made the moves and Heatley's out and Havlat is in and they've got Burns in and Setoguchi's out, it now looks like this team kind of has now refocused and are re-energized, and it's not going to matter what they do in the regular season. It's going to be if they get to the conference finals.
It's like the Yankees as in baseball. You assume they're going to make it there. What do they do when they get to the playoffs?
That's right. 4-1 on the road for the Sharks so far this season.
You can argue they're the best team in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
And you could make a long argument about that.
Mm-hmm. They played like it last night, I'd say.
They were just so deep, Drew, and they have so many guys who can kill you. And now what happens on the back end is you add Burns in there, and guys have more defined roles. He adds an offensive element, but he's also big and he's a good skater. They've always had a weakness on the back end, going back to 2003, and they still never had the all-around guys that they have now, Boyle and Burns. And they can play different pairings, two right-handed shots. They complement the other guys well, like Vlasic and Murray. Obviously, we've talked about that before. And then their offensive lines. I mean, last night, Thornton and Marleau were getting going. And before that, you had, Couture scoring in Nashville. And you have weapons in Pavelski. You have weapons...
Pavelski. They just got a lot of depth.
You have weapons everywhere, guys. Yeah. And if you're able to throw that many combinations out of people, it's hard to counteract.
Pick your poison.
And, it's to ask, talk about Detroit. They're 5-3.
Yeah.
Do they look as dominant as past years? I mean, not to me. They're still a great team and still going to be tough to beat, but I still do see them taking a little bit of a step back this year.
Well, we're bound to find out. Last game of the night, St. Louis went into Calgary. The Flames took care of business on home ice. 3-1 Flames over the St. Louis Blues. Calgary's off to a slow start, 4-4-1, but you have to beat a team like St. Louis on home ice.
St. Louis, we talked about it before the season, and you wonder if they'll ever get it together.
Yeah.
Meaning this young core that everybody's talked about as being able to take the next step. How many of those guys are 45 to 50 point guys? Do they have the top guy? There's a lot of questions to be asked there. And, I don't know the answer to that yet, but I didn't have him for the playoffs, and I just don't know if this team's going to put it all together. And then they have the ownership issue, obviously. Kiprios reporting last night that a purchase agreement was signed with Matthew Holzhauser there. Who knows if that'll actually come to fruition and the sale will be complete, but then you have to wonder, what happens with that team and what the direction of the team. Like, Elliot Friedman speculated that the worry with Oren Kulas being involved is that he would bring in his old new guys, and the guys he brought into Tampa didn't work.
Yeah, well, Lenberry and the rest of that.
But it's really crew. It seems like Holzhauser will have more of a say over those matters than Kulas did in Tampa, at least with Lenberry.
So, I can't see the NHL approving Kulas to come in as an owner, as the guy primary who calls the shots.
Yeah.
I mean, after that disaster in Tampa Bay, I just can't see how they'd have any confidence in him. He pretty much, if it wasn't for Jeff Vinnick, rescuing that franchise, he drove that franchise into the ground.
He did.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
So I'd be surprised to see the NHL let that slide twice. Looking forward to tonight in the NHL, a full slate of Saturday games, of course, and we're most interested in the Jets at Tampa Bay. Gets underway 6 o'clock here, puck drop on TSN 1290. Pregame show with Hustler and Lawless starting at 3, then Rick Ralph at 5. But besides the Jets at Lightning game, some games that jump out at me. I mean, the big one is the late game tonight, Washington at Vancouver. Big test for the Canucks on home ice.
Yeah, can the Canucks handle Washington? I mean, Washington's offensive pressure, more so I'm talking about the goaltending there, and can the Canucks... This is a tough team. It's a good challenge. And teams like the Vancouver who get off to slow starts generally turn it up as against the top teams, and they coast a bit. And so we'll see tonight.
Yeah, it's an out of conference game. Caps are coming off of the loss to Edmonton. They're no longer undefeated. It's going to be a good game. That's a showcase of, two teams that are expected to go far again. And
that's right.
Maybe Washington didn't go quite as far as Vancouver, but it's probably the marquee matchup, and the game that maybe we're watching that isn't the Jets Jets-Tampa game.
And, of course, Boston plays at Montreal, and anytime Boston plays at Montreal, you're always going to get some fireworks.
I guess. That one blown out of proportion for me.
Of course it's blown out of proportion because, Chara's return and everything else along those lines. It's a whole lot of nonsense.
Sure.
But, there's something exciting. Boston versus Montreal is one of those games that has cachet value.
All Montreal fans care about is winning that game. As far as they're going to boo Chara. That's deniable. They're going to boo the entire team. They're going to boo anybody who's in that building.
Yeah, that's right.
It's about the win. Montreal needs the wins. They're off to a horrible start.
They lose, they'll fire another assistant coach.
Exactly. And we'll obviously talk about the firing of Perry Pern throughout the show tonight. When we come back on the other side, Rick Peckham, the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. You're listening to Old Dutch Foods Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly past 12:15, we got Rick Peckham on the line. Let's go to it.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
He's the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Rick Peckham, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Rick, are you there?
We don't have Rick, but we have dance music.
Rick?
We seem to have be having a couple technical difficulties. I'm sure we'll get that straightened away momentarily.
Well, in the meantime, as he's dancing on the table here.
Hey.
Rick Peckham. Okay, we'll get back to Rick in a second.
Well, let's talk about, do you want to lead into the Tampa Bay
right
now?
Yeah, let's talk about Tampa Bay right now.
Well, not the fastest start, and obviously coming off of being tied in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final last year. As you get back
Tim
to
really,
the table.
Tim really likes that music, apparently.
The Eastern Conference Final last year, obviously Nathan Horton scoring in Game 7. Expectations are certainly raised this year. Remember, they came in last year, and there was off of ownership troubles, and you bring in Guy Boucher, and you bring in Stevie Yzerman, and there's a certain semblance of responsibility instilled throughout the organization. So coming this year, it's the classic case of change of moving expectations. One last year it was, you know, what can we do? Anything we do, anything playoffs is certainly satisfying the fan base. Anything past that is extra. So they, you know, and so what happens is they beat Pittsburgh in 7 games.
I think we might have Rick now. Rick, are you there?
I am.
Hi, Rick. Sorry about that. Minor technical difficulties to get us started. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you very much. We're just we're starting to talk about the Lightning, but who better to hear about them than from the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning? You know, sort of a slow start to the season for the Lightning. Any reason in particular as to why they're, you know, 4-4-2 through 10 games?
Well, I think that, you know, you've seen this with a couple of other teams, Vancouver to some extent, the Bruins definitely. You just, in the words of Guy Boucher, the head coach, you just think you're going to pick up right where you left off at the end of last year, and it's just not the case. A little bit of it is the fact that teams recognize who you are and what you've accomplished, and they're a little bit more ready for you. And I think they just were a little slow in terms of getting to the energy level they needed to be at, or realizing that that's how they had to play right off the bat. So it was more a mental situation, but I think they've more or less righted things. I think defensively he'd still like to see them tighten things up a little bit. He was very happy with the scoring chances that they had in Nashville the other night. But then he said, defensively, we started to open up the game, and we just can't play like that. So I think that's what you'll see tonight is them trying to focus more on a, as he says, pack mentality, but get everybody playing positionally as solidly as they were during the 3-game winning streak.
Rick, Guy Boucher came in last year and obviously made a significant difference behind the bench, instilled some kind of new systems, whether it be the 1-3-1 or, you know, different defensive coverages and offensive variations. Have you seen any change in his coaching style this year, maybe both motivationally and systematically?
Not really. He has had an enormous amount of patience for them to work out of this early season funk that they were in, and it really just seemed that I think that some people thought they were taking for granted that they would be as good as they finished up last year. And, you know, he's given them time to shake all of that off. I think he's, still the same hard-charging coach, but he's always very positive about things. And I think one thing that he's had to deal with, the team's had to deal with, is that they brought in a couple of new forwards to round out the fourth line. Brett Connolly, the first-round pick from 2010, was on his 9-game tryout, and so as Guy would say day in, day out, he says, well, we're still kind of in the experimenting mode in terms of our lineup. He was rotating Matias Rotola, Blair Jones, and Tom Pyatt in there, and still finding out what the capabilities of Connolly were. And he says, once we get this experimental phase completed, then we can really get down to what we need to do. So he's been pretty patient with it, but I think he's been, by and large, the same coach that he was last year.
Rick, you mentioned Brett Connolly, and he's very young, and the Lightning decided to keep him. He hasn't really torn it up maybe as much as people would have liked to have. Is that the reason that you just touched on why he was kept up? Because there's still letting him grow and develop, and they're not too worried about his goals and assists?
That's the approach they're taking. In fact, Boucher said it the other day before the Nashville game. He says, I'm removing all expectations of this guy scoring. He says, that will come. We want him to progress in the other areas in terms of defensively, in terms of getting in on the forecheck and being physical and winning battles, which he's done. And I think that surprised a lot of people that, you know, here's this big scorer from junior hockey, and you think that unless the puck's on his stick, he's going to struggle out there and maybe take a long time in order to learn what he needs to do in certain situations. Well, he's grasped what he's been asked to do in a lot of areas. He's played a third line. He's played a lot lately with Marty St. Louis and Benny LeCavalier, and has not looked out of place at all. Playing his off wing, he's playing the left side, and he's been able to turn over pucks in the forecheck and do a lot of gritty stuff that you didn't think right off the bat that this was going to be Brett Conley. And I think a lot of people, even through the organization, are learning about him because 2 years ago he was hurt nearly the whole season, and he had just 1 year of good solid play in junior in the last couple of years. That was last season. And, you know, he's been a big surprise in camp, and here he is. So physically now he's 194 pounds, so he's getting to the point where he can physically hang in there, and I think that was a big concern for them.
You're listening to Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Rick Peckham, the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Rick, how concerned are the Lightning with Dwayne Rolison? He's getting up there in age. Are they concerned at all about him slowing down?
I don't think so. I think it's way too early to look at it that way. He's had some rough outings. The team defensively had some rough outings in front of him. So he gets the start tonight. He came in to finish up the Nashville game on Thursday and stopped all 10 shots he faced. So he's had about 10 days to work technically on what he needed to do in terms of his movement and little tweaks here and there with Franjean, the goaltending consultant. And so we'll see how they're working. But I don't think age is an issue that has kind of crept into their thinking on this, because he keeps himself in such tremendous condition. And I don't think that's something they noticed about it. I think he just technically needed to make some adjustments, and we'll see how those are working when the game unfolds tonight.
Rick, you mentioned age and Dwayne Rolison. Some people have concern there, but Martin St. Louis is on, you know, over 35 now. Is there any concern? I mean, it doesn't seem like he's slowing down at all. Is there any concern there, or is he just always going to exceed people's expectations?
Well, he sure doesn't show any signs of slowing down. Last year at 35, he had one of his best seasons, and that would rank right up there. He's been in Tampa now 10 years playing for the Lightning. So he's off to a pretty good start this year. I think he'd like to put the puck in the net a little more often, but, you know, that would apply to a lot of other people too. But now, he doesn't seem to be slowing down at all. He knows exactly what he needs to do to prepare himself. I think he continues to amaze people in terms of what he can do with his conditioning in the off season, and for a guy his size, weight, and age, he really continues to exceed all expectations and continues to be driven by the fact that people said he couldn't do this. So he's still playing at a very high level.
Rick, he does seem to, his minutes are down about a minute per game. Is that a concerted effort by Guy Boucher to maybe save him for the long haul, or is that just a short sample size that probably will likely change?
Well, when Guy took over last year, he really didn't use St. Louis in killing penalties. Now, Marty's the all-time team leader in shorthanded goals, and John Tortorella used him, and you know, he was up around 24, 25 minutes a game in every situation he was out there. Guy doesn't use him killing penalties. So if you look at the Lightning's penalties, I think they're differential in terms of their power plays versus the number the opposition has had is at a minus 15, which is the largest gap in the league. Mm-hmm. They really haven't had many power plays. So I think that's where a lot of his minutes come up, is he'll play a longer shift and stay out there longer on power plays. But lately especially, they've been getting only one or two a game. And generally, they've had the bad habit of taking a penalty during their power play, so they get partial opportunity. So he really hasn't had a chance to build those minutes up to around, 20, 21 a game.
Yeah, Rick, I have this. I've always been interested in this. Stevie Eiserman, I'm not sure if you've asked this, and I'm wondering if you have. Stevie Eiserman came in there last year, and one of the maybe small surprises when he named Team Canada's squad for 2010 was that Marty St. Louis was an omission. Have you ever asked him if he looks back? Obviously, Canada won the gold, but if he looks back and now having a closer first-hand view of what Marty St. Louis brings to the table every day, if he, you know, quote unquote, may have regretted not bringing him along.
No, I don't think that. I'm sure maybe the beat reporters have asked him. I have not. It's hard to question a lineup that ends up winning the gold medal, and I think that's the approach I think a lot of people have taken. But whatever feelings Marty might have had at that point, and I'm sure he felt like he was snubbed at the time. They've obviously been smoothed over with Steve, because one of the first things Steve did was sign Marty to a four-year contract extension before last season. So that really isn't an issue, but with the season that he went out and had with 99 points last year, second in scoring and a finalist for the Hart Trophy, I don't know if he was making a statement by that or what, but I don't think Steve regrets it. I mean, they won the gold, so but it's something where, as I'm sure he would tell you, Team Canada has just so many options and so many guys they can consider, and you could really pick two teams and have enough to win a medal of some sort in the Olympic tournament. So, I mean, somebody had to sit out, I guess.
Rick, Lightning defenseman Victor Hedman's in his third year, and you know he's struggled to say the least at times in his first 2 years. But to us, you know, he's looked really, really good this year. What's been the key to his development?
Well, a couple of things. He really came on toward the end of last year, and Boucher says now he was our best defenseman in the playoffs. Very poised under pressure. I think that's what really impressed him. For a kid who had just turned 20 in December of last year. And he's kind of carried that through. He really felt that, Victor felt, as a second overall pick, that he had to put up some big offensive numbers. I think the Jets are kind of going through that a little bit with Zach Bogosian at this point, where he was a third overall pick in the Stamkos draft. But once Victor accepted that, you know, just look, let the game come to you a little bit more, and the numbers will come. I think that you know, things really settled down and focused for him. Another thing is that I was just talking to Randy Jones down at the practice this morning before the game, and about the Boucher system, and he says as a defenseman, it's incumbent on you to be very, very patient, because you can't lunge, you can't go out and get a guy defensively. You have to maintain your position. He says, if you get out of position by the least little amount, the system that the Lightning play, he says, that throws everybody out of position. So that's difficult for any defenseman to learn. And Jonesy said that was a big adjustment for him. So you can imagine how a 19, 20-year-old defenseman is going to have to adjust to that, what he ends up going through. So I think that was a factor with him, too. But he is just playing tremendously night in, night out now.
Rick, last question, and it has to do with Vincent Lecavalier. You know, what are the Lightning asking out of him on a night-in, night-out basis? What role do they expect him to play and, you know, take on for the team?
Well, they had a meeting this morning, and Vinny admitted actually to a Winnipeg reporter. He said that, you know, the commitment to defense, he kind of identified Vinny and said, look, it starts with you. When you come back deep and you're not cheating and you're doing everything that a forward should be to be, you know, back and responsible defensively, that filters on through the lineup. So it's really a leadership role for him, and it's a two-way role. It's not something where he's been designated, you know, a number two or a number three centerman or anything like that. He scored some big goals, like Andrew Ladd. He's got two of the game-winning goals for the Lightning this year, so the captain is scoring some big goals. And he's also been very solid physically and pretty good in the face-off circle. So he's really, I think, bringing a winning performance in a lot of areas. And it's something that Steve Eiserman talked with him about before last year, and kind of the experience that Steve went through with the Red Wings when Scotty Bowman took over. So I think Vinny's feeling very comfortable with that responsibility, and I think he's really starting to thrive in it.
Rick Peckham, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Rick. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
Let's head to commercial break. When we come back on the other side, more of the Jet Lightning. You're listening to Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We just heard from Rick Peckham, the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. In case you missed any of that interview or any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. A member of Ezzy's entourage handed me a note that says Ezzy requests to be known as His Royal Highness for the rest of the show. So, you know, Richie, you can just file that wherever you'd like to go ahead and file that.
I doubt I would bet a lot of money, the maybe $110 I have in my bank account, that Drew will never call me Your Highness. When you're already royalty, you don't call someone else Your Highness.
Are you saying I'm royalty?
I think you think you're royalty.
Yeah. Inflated sense of self, but that's okay.
He's something, all right.
Oh, boy. Anyways, welcome back to the program. Coming up in a few minutes, Gabe Desjardins from BehindTheNetHockey.com.
And Arctic Ice.
And Arctic Ice, sure. Let's talk about the...
Sure.
Let's start with, you know, the Jets week in review by really looking at the Philly game, because that was a game... you're not going to see another game like that this year.
That was one of the most exciting regular season games I've ever seen, period. And it was a little bit... let's say, dizzying to watch, but it was frustrating, don't get me wrong, and I can imagine how frustrating it was for Claude Noel and Charlie Huddy and the entire coaching staff, but, you know, I like a lot of offense. You know, I respect, you know, I was a New Jersey Devils fan for many years, so I respect defensive hockey. I can enjoy a 1-0 game, but going into that game, they needed to score more goals, and yes, I know that it was a disgustingly poor defensive performance, and Pavlik was terrible, but they scored more goals, and that's what they needed.
Look, ultimately, all that matters is that they won. Let me ask this question, and I think the answer that I'm going to get for this says a lot about our expectations. When the score was 5-1 Jets and it was 6-2 Jets, how confident were you?
Not very. You know, Drew, it's funny that this game, you know, I find it fairly interesting that this team came up and gave just... bled scoring chances and bled, you know, shots against, and I think it was like 84 shots, including missed and blocked shots, towards the Jets' net. I find that very interesting, considering their game against the Rangers on Monday was by far and away their best offensive performance.
Yep.
So you wonder if Claude Noel was getting through to the guys or not. And so after that game, I thought, oh, you know, he's really getting through to these guys defensively. They're really
after
buying
the Rangers
in.
Game,
that's
you
right.
Mean.
Okay. They're really buying in. You know, they're positionally sound. They're not cheating the zone. They're helping out a little better behind the net. They're improving. And then you see Philly, and you wonder if it's them getting caught up in the tide of the game, or conversely, just reverting back to old form. And you have to wonder, and we'll see more tonight. Again, you know, the Rangers aren't rolling right now. Philly is a good offensive team, certainly playing better than the Rangers. Tampa is a dangerous offensive squad. How do they deal with that?
You know, Richie, you know the saying, a win is a win, and Claude Noel, after the game, said, I'm not going to, you know, I don't remember the exact quote, but he said, if I try to make sense of this, I'd be a sick man, something along those lines.
Yeah, I said to self, don't try and make sense of this game.
That was funny.
He's very funny, by the way. Yeah. He's very funny.
Claude Noel's a very funny guy and a very good coach, and to Richie's point, it's hard for the Vancouver Canucks to play that type of style. It's tough for any team to play that type of style. For the Winnipeg Jets, that is very concerning that, you know, Richie said, were they getting caught up in the tide? I think they were definitely getting caught up in the tide. Guys were totally out of position. We just had Rick Peckham on, and he was talking about Randy Jones and, you know, talking about kind of the intricacies of Guy Boucher's system. You could basically throw out the what to do, you know, when you're playing a good offensive team like the Flyers textbook. You could throw it out the window. They were running around all over the place. They were giving up goals left, right, and center, and I know I just said that it was important for them to get 9 goals and explode offensively, but as far as the way they did it...
I'd rather win 9-1 than 9-8.
Exactly. The way they did it was not pretty at all.
There's two ways to look at it, guys. Obviously, the way to look at it is you score 9 goals, you get a couple guys going who weren't going before, especially the first line, whether they were playing separate or apart. That's a good thing. Obviously, the Andropov, Kane, and Bremestrov line was looking great and creating. You know, alternatively, you have 2 4-goal leads in the National Hockey League. You don't know how to shut it down on the road. It's not that hard. I mean, you put one guy in, and you hold back two in the middle of the neutral zone, and your defenseman plays solid, and you don't give up. And now I realize penalties are involved in that, too, and the Ladd penalty was certainly questionable, and the power play played a factor there.
Yeah.
Even so, you have to stay disciplined. You know, like Ladd's penalty was garbage, but some of the other penalties weren't garbage. And if you know you're up four goals, you can back off a bit.
Yeah.
And that's something maybe they didn't do. And we had Andrew Ladd on yesterday with Husser and Lawless, and he said one of the best ways to combat the maybe kind of struggling penalty kill a bit, I'd say at least, would be to not take the penalties. And it's a simple solution, cliche in a sense, but at the same time, it is true. And you have to know the situation too, guys, when to be over-aggressive, when to not be aggressive. Another positive, though, is that they came back. They were down 8-7 and then came back and won 9-8, so they showed resiliency. But overall, I think that if you look at that game, you're more worried than you are confident.
Well, anytime you get a win, it's a good thing. But what really worries me about that, you know, everything else can be coached away. You know, they can go back to playing the defensive system they played against the Rangers, and, you know, he'll obviously drill that into their minds again. What really bothered me is the play of Andrei Pavlik. And it's bothered me all year up to this point. And at what point in time is it, you know, does it move from being a glitch to something more troubling and long term? He's really struggled to start the season.
Well, I mean, Drew, we're not even 10 games into the season.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, what sample size would you say, okay, it's a real problem, man?
Well, you're getting close to it, aren't you? Goalie, it's always everything. But, I mean, they're very, very, very hard to predict. One concerning part for me would be the fact that last year he started off extremely well. And then he tailed off at the end of the season.
Right.
So what's it? Why is he not playing well now? And goalie is a very difficult position to read, as he. I mean, it's hard to know what's going on half the time. But sure, it's concerning. But come back to me at the 25 game mark. If he's still got a 800 save percentage, which he's not going to have.
Right. And Pavlik, I mean, and you can look at his save percentage, or you can look at his goals against. It's not good. It's
terrible. Yeah.
But I honestly don't. I thought that Bobrovsky played a lot worse. Bobrovsky was in for the first five goals, and then Brizgalov came in and let in four. I thought Bobrovsky, out of the four goalies that were in the game, Mason didn't play for very much, but I thought Bobrovsky, he was more, let's say, individually responsible for the goals. When I look at the goals that were scored in the late second period when the Jets were up by four goals, and then later in the game, I mean, it's a product. Kiprusov, the thing with Mika Kiprusov, and the reason why he's been always been able to play well is because of his defense. And as far as I'm concerned, there are guys on the Jets' defense like Johnny Oduya, that Dustin Byfuglien that have been there, and they've been on good teams. But my concern, Richie, is that the defense, these are guys now that are, Byfuglien is number two, number three defenseman, whatever you want to call it. Oduya is the number five defenseman. Now they're playing a little bit more. They're on the penalty kill. Not Byfuglien, but Oduya. And to me, the way they're running around one game and then, okay, the next game, I agree with you. I thought that they were clearly, it wasn't even close that they were the better team in the Rangers against the Rangers. I think the Jets should be 500 right now, to be honest with you.
But, Leslie, another thing we talk about, rebounds. Rebounds are terrible.
Rebound control is awful.
Bouncing out there. And another thing, obviously, we've talked about the defensive play and Dustin Byfuglien being single-handedly responsible for at least two goals against Philly. Gary wrote about that this morning, about what he's doing. Gary Lawless in the Free Press wrote about that this morning with Byfuglien. There's a lot of factors that go into this.
It's nice and exciting when he rushes the puck up. I mean, it's great. Oh, he's a, you know, because he, you know, it's impressive to see him skate, you know, with a head of steam. But to then lollygag it back in your own defensive zone, that's inexcusable.
It is, Drew. And not only that, I think people are you know, that's what the article touched on, and it's valid. But I'm talking about when you're playing defense, say on a 3-on-2, and if you watch him on 3-on-2s, it's like he's playing a video game, and I'm not exaggerating. He's backing up like a defenseman, and then he just darts forward at a guy. If you watch the first goal against Philly and the Jets on Thursday night, it's a 3-on-2 is developing. Scotty Hartnell on his, you know, Byfuglien's playing the right side, and Hartnell's in front of him. He stops and tries to go forward. I don't know why. Hartnell goes right by him. Then the forward's got to chase Hartnell because Byfuglien's going the wrong way. Who scores the goal going to the net? Hartnell. It's not solid defensive play. So those decisions are a factor too, and does Pavlik have much of a chance there? Probably not. And lots of people are responsible here, but Pavlik does have to shoulder some of the responsibility, if not a large majority of it.
Let's go to commercial break. On the other side, Gabe Desjardins from Behind the Net Hockey is going to join us. You're listening to Old Dutch Foods Game Day here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza.
Drew, where did you get that large pizza?
1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked. Well done.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
I think Gabe can attest to this. We need a pizza there.
Yeah.
We need a Legal Curve pizza.
We're getting one too, right?
I thought you were working on that, Richard.
I'm looking into it.
Gabe, do you have any pull for us getting us a pizza?
I can order one for you guys if you want. It'd probably take a little while to show up, though. I don't know if it'll get there by the time you want it.
And Drew will probably eat it before we have a chance to...
The truth is I'm willing to travel for the pizza.
Yeah.
Will the pizza travel for you, though, Drew?
Well, I don't know. We'll have to find that out after.
Pizza's terrible in San Francisco, so I might as well not order you one.
Really? Why is that?
Why is that? You know, it's like that California cornmeal crust, put asparagus and broccoli on your pizza kind of thing.
It sounds like you're missing a good old Winnipeg pizza. Time for you to come home.
Well, New York pizza. I don't know that I'm going to go. Well, I mean, I think most pizza I ate in Winnipeg was Pizza Hut. So.
Well, we can attest to New York. Next week we'll talk about, or actually 2 weeks from now we'll talk about New York pizza. We head there on Thursday for the Jets road trip. So I'm looking forward to the Drew Mandel
bachelor party.
That too, and the pizza. I'm looking forward to the pizza more than anything, really.
Yeah, and Drew likes to put a genie's cake on his pizza, and then he just eats both of it at the same time.
Is that kosher?
It is in my books. That's all that matters.
So tell me, do all bachelor parties now involve a Jets road trip? I mean, is that just a requirement?
They should.
Yeah.
I mean,
I have a feeling that's how they're going to work now.
Well, I mean, as long as the schedule makers allow for it, and they were quite fortuitous this year with the Islanders, Devils, Rangers trifecta.
It's a Jets road trip with Drew's bachelor party on the side.
Yeah, really. Is. That's fine with me. I'm perfectly fine with that.
We'll take Drew out for a couple drinks or something.
We'll buy him a soda at the game.
Yeah, that's all I want is a soda pop, maybe a cola of sorts. I'm kind of shy and humble, so I don't like the center of attention being on me or anything. Welcome back to the Drew Mandel Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Gabe Desjardins from BehindTheNetHockey.com. Gabe, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing very well, thank you. Let's start in Vancouver. We got to start with Roberto Luongo. You know, every year he's off to a slow start, but this seems to be the only year that the editorial board of a major newspaper is calling for him to be traded. Should Vancouver Canuck fans get off the ledge?
Yeah, well, I mean, they should look back to February of last year, or March 2010, and see similar, even worse performance. The only difference then was that Vancouver put a whole bunch of pucks in the net and ended up winning some of the games. But March 2010 in particular, you know, Luongo had a stretch that was much worse than what we saw here. And the only reason that people are paying any attention to this is because it happened at the beginning of the season. It happened in the middle of the season. Oh, well.
Gabe, Thomas Vokoun was a guy who some people thought would find his way to whether Tampa Bay, Detroit, somebody. He ended up in Washington this year for $1.5 million. Maybe accurate to pay goaltenders that much, but certainly odd considering the market. How would you rate his play so far, and how big of a bargain could he be?
Well, I mean, obviously his results have been great so far. You know, we expect him not to do quite this well going forward, but he's a really good goalie. And he made $33 million or so far in his career, but he was always trapped on relatively weak teams. So he made, he made a deal with Washington, much like, you know, Manny Malhotra did in San Jose a couple of years ago he probably ignored some much better deals to have the opportunity to win. So, you know, you don't get deals like this every day, but I think it was a brilliant move by Washington.
Conversely, you have Philadelphia, Ilya Brizgalov's massive deal. Not that fans shouldn't have already been worried about that, but then after the Jets game, I'm not sure if you heard his comments saying he has zero confidence in himself.
Only another 9 years to go there, guys.
Yeah, could that contract look any worse? Even regardless of the short sample, just could that contract look any worse?
Well, I mean, even if he played his absolute best, it's still a massive overpay. So, you know, we're talking about whether, Philly's wasting $40 million or $50 million. You know, there isn't a huge difference in my mind between the two of them. Even if you assume that Brizgalov is the best goalie in the entire league, which is entirely possible, despite losing a beer league shootout, it's still a massive overpay.
Gabe, we want to get your thoughts on who you think the Jets should trade and maybe when that should happen, because aside from Eric Fehr, they don't really have any major injuries. They've put Brett McLean on waivers, and he was picked up again by the Coyotes after the Coyotes had originally placed him on waivers, and they sent Gagneau down to the AHL.
Who?
Who do you think that is maybe out there that the Jets could maybe go after, or what kind of move should they make, and when should they pull the trigger on that trade?
Well, One guy I always looked at was Ron Hainsey, and I don't know if he's back in the lineup yet.
He's not.
No, he's not. Well, I mean, Hainsey's value, I always like guys like this where, you know, their cap hit is higher than their salary. You know, Hainsey's only making $3 million in the last year of his contract, and his cap hit's 4.5. So he would have been a good guy to move to Florida. And, I mean, I think just in general, any deal you could make with Florida is going to turn out in your favor. So Hainsey's a guy that I would look to move. Wellwood, too. You know, Wellwood is a guy. I think Wellwood was a good bargain pickup for the Jets. And, you know, they can give him a bunch of power play time, pad his stats a little, and then maybe get a useful pick out of him. And then I think, you know, Johnny Oduya, I mean, he's looked terrible so far, but if he reestablishes himself in any way, you know, he's in the last year of his contract. And, I mean, honestly, the Jets should look for any opportunity to move any guy who's out of his RFA status. I would love it if they could find a taker for Bufflin, but I don't see that happening.
No, he's been so defensively responsible. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This is Old Dutch Foods Game Day. We're joined by Gabe Desjardins from BehindTheNetHockey.com. Gabe, the Montreal Canadiens made a splash by firing Perry Pern about an hour before puck drop earlier this week in their game against the Flyers. You know, you look at the numbers that the Habs have been putting up and everything else. I mean, obviously, it's never the coach's real responsibility, but is there any way that the Habs can justify this move?
No, I don't see it. I mean, one of the things that you kept seeing was that the Habs' 1-5-2 start was the worst they'd ever had since hockey got on TV. And first of all, that's wrong. If we go back just two seasons ago, after 18 games, Montreal was 1-10-7. And the only win in regulation, so that's, we're talking again, regulation record. You know, I don't care how teams do in the shootout or in overtime. That's just a roll of the dice. But they were 1-10-7 after 18 games, and the only team they'd beaten was the Islanders. And Montreal didn't make a move at that point. So, you know, to lose your mind after eight games makes no sense. The other thing, too, is that, you know, one other sort of official reason why Pern was fired was that the Habs were 3-for-32 on the power play to start the season. But they were number two in the league in terms of shots taken on the power play. And as I've shown before, you know, the number of shots you get on net on the power play is a much better indication of how you're going to do going forward than the number of pucks you've actually put in the net, especially over a small number of games. So Montreal actually had a very good-looking power play. And, you know, if you think that your opposing goalie is going to put up a 970 shooting percentage on the power play going forward, that's, you know, I don't know that you deserve to be running a hockey team.
Gabe, you mentioned the Florida Panthers earlier, and we want to ask you about a trade that they made with the Vancouver Canucks. David Booth and Steven Reinprecht were sent to the Canucks for Mikael Samuelsson and Marco Sturm, who I think never actually played a game in Vancouver. What were your thoughts on that trade?
Well, again, you know, just scratching my head about how Dale Talon still has a job in the NHL. I mean, it honestly, it makes no sense. I mean, is there anything we can point to where we think he's, you know, made a smart move since he took over in Florida?
Picking up a young Ed Jovanovsky?
Yes. A young compared to when he's 45 years old, Ed Jovanovsky. I mean, it's honestly, you know, the other GMs in the league must be salivating every time they can get Dale Talon on the phone. I don't know how long it's going to take before, you know, his entire roster has been picked clean. We've got nothing left but a carcass there. This Booth deal, you know, essentially Vancouver's sending them, you know, useless players as far as Florida's concerned. And, I mean, I understand they're taking Reinprecht's salary off the ends, but they're getting, you know, a pick and by far the best player in the deal in Booth. And Booth is a guy who had very good underlying numbers last year in Florida, but somehow he had by far the worst save percentage when he was on the ice. So, you know, even though Vokoun had good numbers in goal, the save percentage behind Booth was in the high 800s, you know, whereas most of the rest of the guys on the team were in the 920 range. And so, you know, I think that, you know, he had an awful-looking plus-minus, but I don't think it's, you know, this is not something
that he's done in the past. You know, he's generally had a good save percentage behind him, as most guys do. Most guys have something around, you know, the league average, or at least their goalies' average. And so, you know, Booth had a run of bad luck last year, much like Michael Frolik. And, you know, Dale Talon's inability to evaluate that is another team's game.
Yeah, especially because it's Thomas Focuni who's playing in front of last year. Gabe, final question. You wrote about it on your blog, articleicehockey.com, and you also have behindthenet.ca. The PDO stat is a stat, you know, you talk about many stats, but you mentioned that there's one stat that you would kind of rely on. It would be PDO. Can you explain what that stat is and why you think it's important?
So PDO actually is would be a good way to evaluate Booth's performance. PDO is just the sum of save percentage and shooting percentage. And the thing about it is that it basically has zero future predictive value. And you normally don't like, when you're coming up with statistics, to come up with something that has no explanatory value. Except what we've done here, I have to give credit to a guy named PDO.
PDO.
Yeah, I have no idea who he is, but PDO. You know, he took two things and added them together, and you would think there'd be some talent in there. You would think there'd be players who could have, you know, a high shooting percentage, a high on-ice shooting percentage between them and their line mates, and then also have a good save percentage at the other end of the ice. And surprisingly, or not surprisingly, there's basically no one who does well in both categories. And so, you know, this really captures one of the core, I think the core lessons that you get in analyzing hockey, that nobody can maintain high percentages over a long period of time, that everybody trends very hard back towards the average. And so if you see a guy like Booth, who last year had one of the worst save percentages in the league behind him, and, you know, a below average shooting percentage between him and his line mates when he was on the ice, that's not a guy that you freak out over his poor plus minus. That's not a guy who you think has fallen apart. That's a guy who you say has, you know, just you know, had a bunch of bad rolls in a row and should get a few more chances to right the ship.
Gabe Desjardins from behindthenethockey.com, thanks for joining us this Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, thanks for having me. That pizza's almost here.
That's terrific. And have a good rest of your Shabbos there, Gabe.
Yeah, hey, and have a great bachelor party with the Rangers game.
Thanks, bud. See you later.
All right, later.
Let's head to commercial break. You're listening to Old Dutch Foods Game Day here on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. It's Old Dutch Foods Game Day. In case you missed any of the first hour, we were joined by Rick Peckham, the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning, and we were also joined by Gabe Desjardins from behindthenethockey.com.
Tried to get Ezzy a drink, and the machine ate my... I put in a dollar, and then I got my Diet Pepsi, and then I put in... I got 50 cents back in dimes.
Of course.
And then I put in the 5 dimes, and they only counted 4. So I pressed the button to try and get them all back, only got 4 back, and wasn't able to buy Ezzy a drink.
So we're going to have to pass the hat for you? Is that how it's going to work?
Remus, do you have 50 cents I could borrow?
Drink up!
Anyways, welcome back to the program. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website, of course, is www.illegalcurve.com.
Drew, I know you want to get to the Jets here, but I just looked at that Curtis Foster hit on Gabriel Landeskog. There are
it was dirty.
It was a dirty hit, and apparently they're having a disciplinary hearing right now about it. So we'll update you when we find out later on. I'm talking about
Curtis Foster?
Yesterday's Edmonton.
Andy Sutton.
Pardon me, Andy Sutton. Yesterday's Edmonton Colorado game.
Okay, well,
it was dirty. It was a head hit.
I didn't see an audio of the video of it, so I'll have to take your guys' word for that. I think maybe we'll put it up there maybe on our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve. We can put it up there. Let's talk about the Lightning-Jets game that's coming up in about 5 hours' time here on Sports Radio, TSN 1290. What's the key here for the Jets in order to make it two straight road wins?
Well, okay, I talked about this a bit on my Twitter. Drew, gonna plug it?
At IC Richie P.
I don't follow you.
I don't follow you either.
I follow you in real life, like what you do, like as a role model, but not on Twitter. I see Ezzy G.
I can't even follow what you're saying right now. In any event, no, I think one of the keys, Drew, is I really don't like the way this penalty kill is looking. I've actually quite liked, and we mentioned last week about how I like the power play. Don't so much like the penalty kill. I really worry about today. The top of the box, and it's the two forwards at the top, seem to chase a lot, and there seems to be a huge gap. And I really worry about the team taking penalties, because they've been doing that. And I worry about, on the power play for Tampa against the Jets penalty kill, that seam pass to Stamkos. And that's what he wants. It's like Brett Hall, if you know, to our older listeners, Brett Hall, you know, he lines up generally on the left side, top of the circle, it's, you know, right around the circle. And he wants to one-time that puck in the net. And Pavlik doesn't look great right now, guys. Not that he's not good laterally, but he doesn't look great right now. And the question is, can he get back to his old form? But also, can the Jets take away the seam pass against this team? And if they're going to take it away, are they going to take it away to an extent that they leave other areas vulnerable? I really need, if you're a Jets fan, you have to stay disciplined today. You can't take more than three or four penalties maximum.
And Richie, this is an important game, and they're going to have to play a lot more responsible, but this is also the first of two games, and they've got other games coming up against divisional opponents. They've got Tampa Bay tonight, Florida on Monday, and then when they return after the three games in New York, they've got Florida again. And these are winnable games. Tampa Bay is a better team all around, but you know they haven't been playing exactly like the Vancouver Canucks were last year. Yep. In the first place. They're a team that also is having their own defensive struggles. So, you know, this is a good test for them, and they're going to have to make up points in their own division. They have to beat Florida, and they have to compete against Tampa. And it would be huge if they could, you know, get, let's say, at least a split, maybe 3 out of 4 points in these games. Uh-huh. Because the Jets are already behind the 8-ball at 3-5-1. So, I agree with you completely, and. Today is a different test. How do you react after having the worst defensive game of the season? Yeah, you got the win, and it was an emotionally, you know, positive thing. But now you have to go back to how you have to try to replicate how you played against New York against Tampa, and you can't give up the types of opportunities that were giving up, because Tampa Bay.
It's a different team, though, Izzy. Let me get in there. It's a different team. I mean, the Rangers are more of a sustained pressure kind of team, in that, you know, the Callahan-Dubinsky line likes to pressure down low and cycle the puck, and New York likes to get a lot of their pressure off that. They both pressure the puck, mind you, but Tampa Bay is a lot off the rush. And then you wonder if the Jets, especially in transition, if a Byfuglien gets caught up deep, Izzy, or if Oduya doesn't make a great decision, if they'll take advantage of that. And even Bogosian sometimes jumps out of place. I don't like this matchup for the Jets. I really think it's a transition game that will hurt them. Tampa will play the 1-3-1. Andrew Ladd said yesterday it's similar to kind of the way Philly plays, sure. But the 1-3-1, and that's generally what Tampa Bay employs, and I've talked about it on the show before, but it's kind of one forechecker, and three guys are going to stand up to the line, and they have one defenseman hanging back. What you need to do when on a 1-3-1 is dump it in and pressure the puck, okay? So the question is, can you dump? Well, you say disciplined enough to not play with it at the line, because if you play with it at the line, they come back the other way, sometimes 3-on-2, sometimes 2-on-1. So Dustin Byfuglien and guys like that jumping into the play tonight, instead of trying to dangle at the line, you got to get it in deep. And, you know, it might work. And talking strategically speaking, a guy like Byfuglien, Drew, he takes the puck up the rush, dumps it in the corner, and then follows his own puck. A, he's imposing force for the defenseman. He's going to get hit. You know, B, he's already got a head of steam. And he could very well start the forecheck that way. It might actually work, but you have to stay disciplined. If you see this team trying to make too many plays at the opposing team's blue line tonight, they're going to get killed.
They have to play. I mean, it's a cliche, but it's about playing a smart road game. And, I mean, what, going back to that Philly game, you know, Andrew, that goal, I mean, I don't even remember what goal it was. It was, I think, a goal to either tie up the game or to give the Flyers the lead.
Which goal?
Where Andrew Ladd had the terrible turnover deep in the Flyers' zone. You know, the play there, obviously, was to put it in deep, and instead he just really threw it out in front of his own net. The only reason the Jets won that game in Philly is because the Flyers' goaltending was beyond abysmal. There's just no way that they can play that same way and expect to have a similar result. They have to go back to playing, you know, intelligent hockey is really what it boils down to. They're not going to be the least. They're not going to have a chance tonight or most any night in the NHL unless they're playing intelligent hockey.
Yep, and Chris Mason might not be in the lineup, and. They've recalled Peter Menino, but Pavlik is expected to go to
the... Yeah, he's playing.
Expected to start.
If Mason's out for a couple of games, with a hamstring or a groin, you never know.
You ride Pavlik.
You have to ride Pavlik, and you have to ride him, and you have to hope that he's going to right himself while in the net, without if he doesn't right himself while he's in the net, then they don't have a chance. Because, I mean, Peter Menino is not going to be the answer for anything. I mean, this team is seems like it's a very difficult stretch of their season. Their goaltending is struggling, and the goaltender that hadn't been struggling is now injured. They're playing against very intelligent, well-coached teams, especially in Tampa Bay.
This is
a game tonight that really, you know, if they play anything like they played Thursday, they're going to be in trouble.
The key is discipline to me. Discipline penalty-wise, I said it, and discipline system-wise. That's two big things. And you know what? Against New York, they did both very well. Now, of course, against New York, they lost, you know, on two power play goals against, mind you. But, you know, overall, the discipline was pretty good. And you have to sustain that to be able to have a chance tonight. And the last thing they need to do is fall behind. Because if you fall behind, you have to take chances. They're going to capitalize right away. So, I mean, again, some obvious, some not. But this team has to play a structured style. We talked about it, guys. You can't really coach skill. You can coach a defensive conscience. And games like Philly are fun and you won. So you take it to the bank. You take the 2 points. You run with it. You say, okay, can we get a split here? We'll take 4 out of 6 in the next, three games of the first part of our road trip. Okay. But can Claude Noel get it across, Charlie Huddy and those guys, get it across the defensemen to play a disciplined game? The forwards, you mentioned the Andrew Ladd turnover, something like that, Drew. Getting 3 forwards caught in deep. These things happen a lot. And so Andre Pavlik hasn't looked great, but there's been a lot of chances against.
He's been hung out to dry on numerous occasions, absolutely.
You can argue that the Jets have, you know, about chance maybe one opponent this year, too.
Maybe probably the Rangers.
The Rangers and the
Hurricanes.
And so that's a slippery slope, isn't it, guys?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're playing with fire. You have to play. I mean, we know that this team is not blessed with the most skill in the league. And then if they're undisciplined on top of it, you're really asking for trouble, and sooner rather than later, wins are going to be hard to come by.
Yeah, and you're obviously going to win more games when you're playing a structured defensive system when you don't have the talent. And
that's right.
And the team
that's
that right. I'm going to continue to use as an example is the Nashville Predators. The Nashville Predators have some good players, but similar to the Jets, they're a low-spending cap team, and the Predators aren't winning games 9-8. That's not their bread and butter. Their bread and butter. And yeah, I you can make the argument they've got Shea Weber, Ryan Suter, and Pekka is a better goaltender, but we have some pretty good defensemen here. And I look at Zach Bogosian, Bogosian. It's a tough name to pronounce when you got the SIA there, but
that's a Brian Munn's correction.
Bogosian, he to me, you know, has gotten better over the last few games, but still he was the only. I wrote this in the preview, for IllegalCurve.com. There were only five players that were minus.
Yeah, he's -3,
and he was -3. And when you score 9 goals, that's not bad. And I'm not singling out Bogosian because I actually think that you know he's got he's got. Probably the most upside on this team, especially on defense. When you look at how young he is, I'm not saying he's the best. I'm just saying, when you look at what he could become,
let me ask you this: Izzy, do you think he can become the offensive player that people think? I don't know.
What did people think of Bogosian? Because I never thought he was going to be Drew Doughty. And I mean,
not that. But and then that's a good point. But I mean. Second power play unit quarterback. He's got a great shot. I just don't know if his vision is such that it will lead to even a 40-point defenseman.
I'll say this one: I'm a big Bogo fan, but sometimes he makes some moves that you just don't see a Drew Doughty make. And,
that's right.
And I think that's where coaching comes in a little bit, helping a guy like that.
I want to talk about Zach Bogosian, but I want to do it after the break because I think he's made tremendous improvements in the first 8 games of the season. I think that's Charlie Huddy's influence. Let's head to break. You're listening to Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com.
Drew, do you think if Harry Potter owned a hockey jersey, he would have a Corey Potter jersey?
Drew, Eddie, are you opening at Rumors tonight?
No, he's not. You would never let a hack like that on stage.
Who's at Rumors this week?
Brian Callen. You should know that. We plugged it last week. You've seen him at... You know, he's one of the original cast members of Mad TV. You've seen him in The Hangover, The Hangover 2. I'm not sure if there's any tickets actually left for tonight's shows, but call Rumors at 488-4520, and you can find out for sure.
Are there any high-course ha's at Rumors?
Ha! ha, like that.
Hate the high course ha.
Yeah.
I wish they would bring back the laugh track. I remember back in the day when I'd go to Rumors and they would have a laugh track.
That never once happened. Not once.
Laugh track.
You generally don't need a laugh track at a comedy club. Let's talk about, let's just finish off talking about Zach Bogosian. You know,
Are you sure it's not Bogosian?
I'm positive it's Bogosian.
Tim, that would have been a great chance right there for a laugh track.
You know, that there's been a lot of, you know, there was a lot of fear that he would be regressed as a defenseman from his rookie year to his last year in Atlanta. And then this year at the start, he seems like he's sort of finding himself a little bit more. There's none of the frantic action. He's more comfortable with the puck and is making the smarter play more often than not. Would you agree with that?
No, you know what? I'm going to jump in here. I mean, Zach Bogosian, I'll pronounce it right. It's his third year. He was drafted third overall behind Drew Doughty, who's drafted...
This is his fourth year now, Ez.
Pardon me. Go back. Everyone expects him to be something. And as far as I'm concerned, he's still making a lot of mistakes. And I think he's been good this year. I didn't watch him as much as I did this year compared to last year. But I still think he needs quite a bit of coaching. I mean, you mentioned being confident with the puck. At times he is. At times he also makes bad mistakes. And Bogosian's a big guy.
It's Bogosian.
Bogosian. Sorry. What's the right?
Bogosian.
Bogosian.
Jean.
Bogosian.
Not Zien.
Jean. Bogosian.
You know what? I'll just call him ZB.
Okay.
ZB has been good at times and bad at times, and he was -3.
Is it Bogo or Bogo?
It's Bogo. Can you get back? Can you finish your point, please, so we can move on?
Hey, when the segment's sponsored by Rumors, the funny guys are gonna come out.
Yeah,
people are probably strangling themselves right now, thinking of how unfunny we are. But that doesn't matter. We're on the radio, and you're not. So, I honestly don't think that he's been that good, and I think that he has a lot of room to grow, and I think that as far as his development has gone, he has. He has maybe longer to go than the others that are in his same class.
I'm Luke Shen and Drew Doughty. On Bogosian. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. You know what? I think physically he's as talented as it gets. He's a great skater. He can close the gaps. He's got a great shot. He's everything physically he can do. It's two things. It's his poise with the puck, which I think is lacking. And I don't know how much you can teach that, Drew. You can teach a decision-making to an extent. When you have time, Hattie's like, Zach, don't mess around with the puck. Get it off the glass. You can kind of coach that. But can you coach the puck up the ice and knowing where to go and being poised with it? I don't think you really can. So I think in one sense, you're going to be able to coach when it's more clear what to do and you have more time. But when the pressure's on, he still will take the puck into the neutral zone and he'll still make some turnovers. He'll still make some rush passes. I don't know if you can teach that. I personally don't think you can. We'll see with more time. But it doesn't mean he can't skate with the best of them, close gaps, and play a very solid defensively responsible game. The question is not, can he become a top four defenseman? I think we know he can. The question is, can he become a top two defenseman?
Do you think he's improved since the start of the season?
Do I think he's improved since the start of the season? I do think he has improved, absolutely. I think he was running around a little bit too much, trying to do too much, quote-unquote. He has. But at the same time, you see a game like, the Rangers. They lock him up against Dubinsky and Callahan, a kind of a good team on the boards, a good forechecking team, a good cycle team, and he does a really good job. Then you see him against Philly, he was lined up a lot of the game against the Briere line, and they got embarrassed. So progress, step back, and can the steps forward eclipse the step back? Because otherwise he's staying stagnant, and that's not good.
Fair enough. Let's look to tonight's game against the Lightning and talk about the forward groups of both teams.
Okay, let's do
definitely
it.
The Lightning definitely have more talent than the Jets do up front.
Yeah.
So two-part question. One, is there any area there that the Jets can take advantage of on the Lightning? And two, how do the Jets forwards neutralize Tampa's skill and offense?
No to the first question. How do you neutralize their skill and offense? Well, the easy answer, they give the cliche answer, is you make them play defense. But the Jets haven't really shown a sustained pressure consistently in the other team's zone. So, what would you do, Drew?
Yeah. How do you, as a less talented team, how do you combat against a more talented team? all other things being equal. You got more talent on Group A, and Group B has less talent. How does Group B defeat Group A?
It gets back to discipline, Drew. I mean, if you're going to stop the Stamkos, Malone, you know, Stamkos line and Malone, and if they're going to throw, St. Louis has been playing with both Stamkos and LeCavalier. So what happens is they move the ball with who to match up. And the Jets have been kind of using a top four. Byfuglien and Enstrom have been playing, you know, they played against kind of like Jágr, and Bogosian kind of played against Briere. And then in New York, you had Byfuglien and you had Enstrom playing against Gabrick, and you had Bogosian for the most part playing against Domínský and Callahan. So tonight you might see, to be honest, if I would think you'd probably see Bogosian against, depending on where St. Louis is playing, with Stamkos, you know, against Stamkos. Good skater, quick, you know, a guy can get into scoring areas. And you see LeCavalier, a bigger guy, maybe down low against Bogosian. Sorry, against Byfuglien. So that's kind of the matchups. Now, forwards, Drew, it's a discipline factor. And it's making sure your guy's down low, making sure your center's down low, covering where he needs to be, or whoever the first man back is. It's making sure you don't cheat the zone. I mean, simple things, Drew, but when you don't have a lot of skill, you have to do them. Getting the puck off the boards in your own zone. Getting the puck deep against this team. It's all those things. Otherwise, I mean, you can't trade chances with this team. You get killed. And the Jets don't have enough offensive talent. I mean, let's be honest, guys. Where's Brian Little been?
Trust me, I have him on my fantasy team. He's got 2 points. Three now. He's got 3 points now.
I'm leading the pool. How could that be funny?
You'd be leading the pool by more if Brian Little had some work. No, yeah. But you know what? The top line hasn't been very good. And
what is the top line?
Let me ask you this, because we keep saying fourth line being the GST line and top line being the Little line. Let's call a spade here. The top line is the Bermistrov line.
By far.
And the third line is the GST line.
Yeah, by far. It's not even a comparison.
It's not. It really isn't.
I mean, that line has been so far heads and shoulders, which, by the way, is what the Jets wanted. Well,
we said by the end of this year and the middle of next year, you wanted Bermistrov to pass Little and you wanted Kane to pass Ladd.
I'd say they're on their way. If they're not already, I mean, Bermistrov has definitely passed Little. There's no disputing that.
And guys, if we're talking about that,
Kane is on his way, passing Ladd.
I don't know about that yet, but
he's getting close.
He's talented enough to get close pretty quickly.
That's right. So you're happy about that. So let's not talk. You're right. Ladd, Little, and Wheeler, if it is Wheeler or Wellwood or whoever it is, should not be considered the top line anymore because they're not.
And if we're talking about this 9 games into the season and it's not made official by Claude Noel, it's just a matter of time. I mean, that is the top line.
You never make your top line. I mean, you never, officially. But anybody who's watched the Jets knows that Bermistrov has been their best player, and Antropov has been their second best player.
What about Bogosian?
What about him? You just want to say his name again, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay, fine, I understand. Jeez, you guys. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the Ladd, Little, Wheeler line.
Okay, well, it didn't play together for a lot of the... Wheeler, they connected for the last goal, but Wheeler played a lot of the game on the third line, quote-unquote third line.
Which would be with who? Maxwell and... No, Maxwell
didn't
scrapped.
Play. It was Stapleton and...
What are you talking about? The third line?
What's his name? McArdle. That's your fourth line. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and if people weren't aware, Brett McLean got claimed on waivers today by Phoenix,
which is ironic because the Jets claimed him off of waivers
teams
at the beginning of the year.
They claim a guy right back, if he loses.
Yeah, but I mean, at least that was the end of the Brett McLean experiment.
You know, Drew, it was worthwhile in my opinion because it didn't cost anything aside from a waiver claim. Yeah. And the truth is, you throw Cormier down, he hasn't performed that well offensively in St. John's. But you throw him down, you have the option of throwing him down, you claim McLean, you see what you get from him, you get nothing, you get rid of him. I mean, what's wrong with that? It's a free try.
No argument for me.
Nothing happened.
And they
pay $20,000, whatever it is, for a waiver claim. What do we care?
And they cut bait pretty quickly, so they knew it wasn't going
to
work.
Well, they're trying to send him to the minors. They would like to keep him, obviously.
Sure, you never know. But Phoenix wanted him back, and that's fine. Phoenix will send him to San Antonio of their AHL team, and maybe he'll develop into a player. We'll see.
Yeah.
But, the GST line has really been night in, night out, the most consistent line for the Jets. And for those that are surprised that Jim Slater's, goal-scoring prowess, it hasn't happened so far in his NHL career. But this is a guy who's a former first-round pick and who tore it up in junior. So this is a guy who knows how to score.
Junior at NCAA.
I thought he played junior. I could be wrong. I'll check it out right
NCAA.
Now. It could be NCAA. I mean, it's certainly not unheard of for me to be wrong. But
it's actually... expected.
It's expected that I'm wrong. Yeah.
Drew, he does a lot of good things. He kills penalties. He can win faceoffs. He's got pretty good hands, guys. I mean, in that goal against Philly, he's at the right spot at the top of the circle, one timer. I mean, certainly demonstrating offensive instincts. Not the most offensively proficient player, but a good fourth line center. That's for sure.
You're right. It was college. I apologize. Yeah. But, I mean, he was a point-of-game player in college, and, I mean, he's got talent. He's got talent. Now, this is, I mean, you know, going above and beyond what we've seen so far from him in his NHL career.
He's their best face-off guy, Drew.
Their face-offs are... It's still an issue for this team.
It really is an issue, and I don't see that getting rectified, to be honest.
And that's, I think, something that is...
It got better against the Rangers.
Did it ever get... I mean, they had more victories against the Rangers as it happened, but...
Yeah, and it got better against Carolina, a terrible face-off team. And they're going to have their nights, Drew, but they have to develop these young guys. That's the key.
Yeah, well, that's what they have to keep doing then. Let's go to commercial break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to break down the power play, penalty kill, special teams, and intangibles for tonight's Jets-Lightning game. You're listening to Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290.